A news report from last year that I came across showed there's still barely 100 female firefighters in all of Metro Vancouver, which kind of, you know, blew my mind. It's been a while since you first joined the force. You think we would have progressed since then. But do you know what the numbers are here in Surrey? And what do you think is kind of leading to this still resistance for women to join?
Well, the numbers in Surrey are about 12 women to around 360 male, and we're talking suppression. Because we have other areas within fire, which is dispatch and fire prevention. But if you're talking suppression, which most of us are, we have about 12 women to 360 men. And that excludes me because I've left the floor of suppression 3 years ago, but I'm still in the fire service. And it excludes our first female who retired earlier this year. So we did have 14 up until a couple years ago, and we've it's just that we're not having women in the same numbers as men that are actually even applying. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we're trying to rectify.
Coming for yourself, what do you think is leading to this shortage? Do you think it's, you know, like yourself when you first joined, just not even having the awareness sometimes still in 2020 that, oh yeah, women can be a firefighter? Or is it, I hate to say it, you know, there has been in the past talks of a toxic kind of masculine workforce. Do you think that's leading to it?
I think there's a variety of things, and I think everybody has barriers to achieve the things that they could achieve for different reasons. And I think that toxic workplace that you're speaking of is definitely one of them. And that occurred, it was very prevalent and in the news 20 years ago. And I think we haven't forgotten that as a society. And I think we remember those stories. And they could have been just the one story here and there, but they shook us to the core. And they probably prevented women from going down this path. And not only did they prevent women from going down this path, hearing those stories in the media, but they prevented fathers from telling their daughters and encourage them to go down this road. Because as we know as parents, I'm a parent myself, and one of the worst things is to know that your child may be up against any sort of strife that would cause them grief. So I think, you know, up until now, and maybe even now, a lot of fathers and uncles and people that could mentor women into going into that role maybe not have wanted to do so to protect them. And I don't blame that for occurring. I think that's a very humanistic, you know, ideal. But at the same time, those stories were few and far between. Mm-hmm. And we do have a paramilitary structure, and it could be looked at as, you know, even if you look in the military, there's not as many, you know, women as there is men. And do we gravitate towards those type of command and control structures? I think we can. And I think there's a lot of women out there that would thrive in that department. And we want to, in that environment. And I think we need to bring it to the forefront to allow them to know that they can succeed in this role, and that toxic environment is one that we've been working hard to eradicate. And I think we have done a very good job of that, and being a very inclusive industry to get into now. But it's alleviating those fears, mm-hmm, so ingrained in people, and those memories they have.
Like you said, yeah, that unfortunately the bad news is what makes the news, and we don't hear as much about, like you said, what fire halls are doing to try to erase those stigmas. Tell us about recruitment efforts you're doing in Surrey right now, just that, to try to change women's mindsets perhaps and create a more positive light.
Yeah, so I've developed these, I didn't develop them, they were in development, and I now help run them, and they're the women's workshops. And I call them a level one and a level two. And that level one, which I have three coming up this fall, actually one's this Saturday, is just I want to create a safe environment for a female that is thinking along these lines of entering into this industry or striving to enter into this industry, because it's a long road and there's a lot of different things you have to do and certifications to get. And so before they make that decision to go down that road, to actually have the opportunity to talk to somebody, to come into a safe environment and try some of the tools and try on some turnout gear and put on an SCBA and see if they're claustrophobic and do things that they may never have been exposed to in their life. And some people may argue that the guys need that opportunity too, and many of them may need that opportunity, but a lot of men know people in the fire service and they're getting that chance to talk to people and find out about the industry and maybe ask some really investigating questions into what the culture's like, but who's, where does a woman go to look for that and not feel vulnerable to ask the questions that's really prodding our minds?
And what are some of those uncomfortable questions or just main questions that you find you get from women?
Well, one of the questions that would come to mind right away that they may not ask with men in the room is, what do you wear underneath your uniform when you need to get
can I wear my
from
Licenza
your uniform
bra
into your turnout
or...
gears? You know, it's an uncomfortable one, and it's one that when you get hired, you kind of need to have that one answered. So, and they're very simple things like that. And we wear boxers. Like, we just, and it, you can wear whatever you want, but it's like, yeah, when the fire comes in and you need to go from one uniform to the other, we don't all rush to, you know, private bathrooms and all that. You discreetly get changed into your turnout gears, and we wear boxers, and we have, you know, our T-shirts and our socks and everything else underneath. There's no, we're not exposing ourselves in any way. But if you didn't know that information, it may be something that you're wondering about, but you're like, well, how do I ask it, or who do I ask it?
For sure.
The men don't understand that that would be a question we would have in the first place, so we address those things.
I didn't even think about that. Like you said, no. Yeah, when the actual call comes, you got 20 seconds to get changed,
no.
But there's my coworker, you know, he's 60, I'm 20, ew.
Yeah. Time is of the essence, and we, you know, you got to get things done, and, you know, we've been there, done that, so why don't we impart that knowledge of, yeah, we have to get changed in a hurry, and this is what we do. So it's a safe environment to ask, and they talk about the sleeping arrangements, and what's it like when you do a night shift, and what is it, how are the dorms structured, and there's things they want to know, because you want to be in a safe culture, in a safe environment when you're in your workplace, and the fire service is so different from that in our night shifts, and there's other, you know, there's other industries that do night shifts, but ours are different because we do have the sleeping quarters. And so there's things that people, that women may want to know about.
Yeah, so how does that work, though? Because it would be tough also as a woman coming in. I would think, you know, I also want to try to fit in, quote, be one with the boys, where a part of me would feel almost bad requesting, you know, if I'm the only woman on at night, a separate room like a princess. But in the same breath, yeah, the thought of staying with, you know, four guys in a bunk bed could also be uncomfortable. So how does that work?
Well, a lot of our halls now do have, some of them have separate quarters. A lot of them have dividing walls in between. Some go straight up to the roof, but they have a common open space at the foot of the bed. And again, that's so you can rapidly respond from a sleeping right straight out the door to the truck. Again, you know, time is of the essence. It always will be. So there's certain things, but we want there to be privacy. So there's, in every hall, there is a separate bathroom for a woman. So that open-ended at the end of the bed doesn't mean that we expect her to get changed or whatever, or even the guys to, because they can be uncomfortable in that situation too. But everybody has a locked bathroom to do whatever it is that they need to do. But in the middle of the night, like, we are all issued shorts, and we all sleep in shorts and T-shirts. So once it's time to get up and go, you get up and go. But you do have those privacy divider walls. And
nice.
Yeah, and we've all, you know, I get a chance to talk, and we talk within the group, and, you know, it meets our needs.
Yeah, like you said, just helps create that comfort, right? That's the main thing for everyone, for men, for women, both guys also. I was going to ask, what qualities does a woman bring to firefighting that can actually make her, dare I say, an even better firefighter than the man?
We bring, and I don't want to say a level of empathy that a male does not have, but we bring, I think we, in a way, sometimes we do. We've got that bedside manner. A lot of times that when we respond to these calls, and a lot of them, well, anytime somebody calls 911, there's a level of anxiety and stress that they are exhibiting, that they have. And I think that we can help with that level, with our bedside manners and our empathetic natures, and we've got that emotional intelligence. And there's actually been studies to say that women may have ingrained a higher level of emotional intelligence. And again, it's not to say that men don't have it. I've seen a lot of men that display quite a lot of it. But there's studies to show that maybe women have that on a larger scale, and that goes a long ways in this department, not only for the people that we serve, which is the entire community, but as you've heard, the issue of mental wellness and PTSD and things that happen on our job, that they can be a level of support.
They not turn inward, right? Like you said, check in with your coworkers, But also I could see that, like, being attending at fires. I had that even in broadcasting, attending to some fires. Yeah, I was reporting on it, but I couldn't help but talking with the victims, hearing their stories, really getting involved in their emotions in a good way. Well, let's talk about the actual, obviously a big part, if anyone's listening to this, who's interested in firefighting, you know, more the logistics or the money numbers. Like, what are some perks people may not realize of being a firefighter?
So it's a very well-paying job because it does understand that there is a risk. We have a high risk of cancer. There's all sorts of those sort of things that it takes into account for. But the other perks that I can mention or benefits are absolutely fantastic. We have great benefits. We're never lacking in any area of our benefits. And we have the four-on, four-off cycle, which is excellent for your time off and quality of life. We do lack in sleep, and as long as you make up on your sleep and get your naps in, because you did do some night shifts.
Buy a good eye concealer, you'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. But that 4 days off allows you to have that quality of life where if you want to pop into the interior and do some mountain biking, if you want to spend a lot more time with your children and go to, take them on their school trip and anything, like, you have time to spend with your friends and your family. And, yeah, there are times when you're doing a night shift and it's Christmas. So there's give and take in that. But when you look at that back in the end of the year, I think you got more out of it than was taken away from working on a stat holiday. You were able to be there for your school sports and all those sorts of things that you may not have been if you were a 9-to-5 worker. So I enjoy the structure of the 4-on-4-off. I don't have it anymore, and I do miss that.
It's cool. You can actually carve out a life. I actually dated a cop years ago, and I got to experience the 4-on-4-off. We'd take, small camping trips during the week, which was great. Not much traffic on the roads even. Like, you really felt like you had two completely separate lives, but in a good way.
Yeah, like, you don't have to do the stuff on the weekend where everybody else is. You can get your hair done on a Tuesday morning and that kind of thing. Like, it was really, really, really good. Now I'm fighting with everybody else on the weekend to get some grocery shopping.
You're one of those back to the Costco elbowing and stuff.
That's right.
Last question. Like I said, there's so many benefits, to being a firefighter, how much, like you said, the attitudes have changed. I was just curious, what has Surrey done also, to make sure it is a bully-free, safe environment for women? Like, what resources are there that maybe weren't for women 10, 20 years ago, if, God forbid, they do face, what we hear about sometimes in the news?
Well, we have, we go over our harassment policies yearly. We do, and it doesn't just mean read this policy with your crew. We actually bring in somebody to talk to them about workplace harassment and everybody's human rights and who's actually liable for that. And when we hear of an incident, we actually go down and talk to the crew, because if one person does the wrong thing, the whole crew has done the wrong thing because they stood by and let it happen. So it's not being an observer. Like, being an observer and not being a part of the actual action does not free yourself from that responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We talk to them quite a bit about it. But I have to say, in the city of Surrey, and I've been here a long time now, we've had a very good culture here. And, again, we didn't have the women hiring, but I kind of sometimes blame it on the industry as a whole, because the stories came out from all over the place, and it painted everybody with the same brush. But our union president, back in the day when I started, he was saying, we need to hire more women. They bring a real value to this organization, and we need to, as an organization, reflect the people that we're serving. And we're not doing that appropriately with the demographic that we have now. It's not meeting the needs of our community. And our chief was on board back then, and they started this way earlier than I think a lot of people
did.
Like,
this was what, the 90s, 2000s kind of thing?
This was probably in the late 80s, like, before I got on. And they were developing this culture, and they were very, especially our union president, was very influential and respected by the entire union, which is the majority of our workforce. And so when you have somebody that is a leader amongst their group, and they don't have to be in that leadership position, but possess those leadership qualities, but is also doing the right thing, so people are following them, that's what we had. And we may have lucked out with that, but we did build a culture from the late 80s on where it said, we need to be more inclusive than this. Let's be aware of what's going on. We have blips. We everybody's got blips, but we address it immediately. And again, we talk to the crew and say, you guys are all responsible here. Like, think about it. Think about, like, don't just avoid the situation. Be part of the solution.